I'm Sean Crawford. 10 years ago this month, Rod Blagojevich was impeached and removed as governor of Illinois. He was later convicted of corruption, including attempts to sell a U.S. Senate seat. He received a 14-year sentence and remains in prison. Reporter Dave McKinney covered it all as a statehouse reporter. Today, he works for public station WBEZ in Chicago and has launched a podcast called Public Official A, in which he recounts what happened a decade ago and updates it by talking with those who played a role in the story. And I had a chance to talk with Dave McKinney about the project. The whole state, the whole country actually watched this unfold as this drama was taking place back when Rod Blagojevich was brought up on charges following his arrest, when he was, you know, sent out of office. Why decide to tackle this issue now 10 years later?
Well, I mean, of course, the anniversary is there, but I think the bigger thing is that you know, Donald Trump has sort of made the Rod Blagojevich story timely again. I mean, he you know, is on Air Force One back at the end of May, and surprises everybody and says, you know, I'm thinking about commuting Rod Blagojevich's sentence. He should have never been in prison. He said stupid things, but it's not any different than what anybody else said. And so that, of course, then takes everybody by surprise, including Patty Blagojevich. And then it goes on into the, you know, it opens the door to this whole campaign on her part to try to get him free. I mean, she'd been doing it before, but it really kind of took off after that.
Is there a lot we don't know about this story? Again, because it was so public, almost everything. These people were, you know, going on television to proclaim his innocence. We were hearing all about the investigation. We heard the tapes, of course, that were played. What do we not know about this?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, the temptation, journalistically, the temptation with these stories that, you know, happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 40 years ago is to just kind of, you know, summarize what happened, and they turn into kind of clip jobs, and they're not that engaging or interesting. But what made this kind of different, I think, was the ability to sit down with all of these participants. I suspect my producer Colin McNulty and I, we wound up speaking to probably 14 or 15 different participants, on the investigative side, of course, Mrs. Blagojevich, you know, some of his former key aides. And it's just interesting, you know, now I guess with the luxury of time, people feel a little freer to open up and give insights into things. And it truly was a remarkable kind of thing to do, to sit down with Mrs. Blagojevich for 6 hours. You know, after a certain period of time, you know, when you're talking to someone that long, they kind of get off their talking points. And then that's when you start to hear things like, you know, how the Blagojevich's youngest daughter, when you know, all of this talk of Rod possibly coming home early, when it happens and then it, you know, nothing evolves from that, she stops reading his emails from prison because it's just too hard to take. You know, you hear details like that. The fact that you know, we were sitting down in the same study where, you know, one of the phones was tapped. I mean, that was kind of an eye-opening experience to be welcomed at the door of their house on the northwest side of Chicago. Welcomed in, and we go into this library, and one of the first things that Mrs. Blagojevich says is, "Oh, there's the phone they tapped," you know, and it's and sitting on a little library table is the, you know, is this old landline that they have for whatever reason they still have in their house, and so, you know, you get details and nuances like that about, you know, kind of inner thoughts that you wouldn't normally hear on these Fox News interviews that she's been doing.
Well, I'm sure you had to have some type of image of Patty Blagojevich before you started this project, this podcast. In the first episode, you talk, as you mentioned, a lot with her, going into her home. She really seems to let her guard down. Did your image of her change a bit?
Well, I mean, I think that's fair to say. I mean, you know, again, with that amount of time, I mean, a person's humanity kind of comes through. And, you know, I think the tapes that were played, you know, during the criminal trials, and especially the ones with her where, you know, they were profanity-laced. I mean, she kind of had this image as a Lady Macbeth kind of character. And I think, you know, that description, I think, might have been coined by the Tribune in one of their stories. But it was, you know, you come away with the idea, here's a person who is just sort of desperate to reunite her family. She's, you know, sort of looks at this whole political career of her husband's as, you know, wishing it hadn't happened. I think Colin and I really kind of got immersed into the, you know, the family dysfunction that has occurred as a result of her husband going away to prison for so long.
And you also, as you mentioned, talked to some of the officers who actually went to the door that day and arrested him, how they called beforehand, met at a restaurant nearby and, had breakfast, I guess, got ready and then made the call. You're kind of getting the view of people who played parts in this, but maybe we didn't know their story.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, one of the agents that we spoke with, has spoken publicly, but in very dry terms, and only, Daniel Kane is the is one of the agents that was involved in the arrest, and with his partner Patrick Murphy, the two of them had, they monitored literally hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of conversations that the Blagojeviches were having. And, Kane spoke during the impeachment, tribunal in Springfield. And then I believe he also was a witness in the criminal trial. But, in those environments, you, as a reporter, Sean, you remember what that's like. I mean, it was a very dry kind of bit of testimony. And here what we have is sort of the TikTok of, what it's like to sort of plan all of this out and then to execute it. And with both agents, I mean, we associate their work with Blagojevich himself, and it most certainly was. But, these guys, they got their toes wet in the whole situation here, going back to 2003, where they feel this phone call, one of them does, in the suburban Lyle FBI office from this woman who was a CEO at a Naperville hospital called Edward Hospital. And that's the very beginning of all of this, where Edward Hospital wanted to expand. They had to take their project in front of the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board, which is the regulatory panel that approves hospital projects. And what they find shortly after presenting their case there is that, there are corrupt board members, and one in particular, Stu Levine, is encouraging them to use a particular contractor and a particular lender, and that if they do those things and pay them money and that kickbacks arise out of it and everything, she calls him up and says, "Wait a minute, I'm being shaken down," and that's when the recording starts, and it's such a rich piece of information, new information really, about how, this one particular case, it was like the beginning domino to fall. And Pam Davis was the name of the CEO. We sat down with her, and she talked in detail about what it was like to be wearing a wire in her bra, no less, and going to restaurants in the western suburbs, talking to some of these corrupt players and getting them on tape, which then was the first rung on the ladder. And from there, these two agents took us on this journey all the way to the front door of the Blagojevich house and what the arrest was like.
The call was being made, and at that point, we were heading toward the door.
He answered the phone immediately, explained to him that we had agents outside his door. We'd like to do this as quickly and quietly as possible. And he obviously, as anybody might in his position, say, "Is this a joke?" And I said, "No, I can assure you it's not a joke." But I think he just gave the phone to Patty.
I hung up on him because I thought, this is a prank call.
I mean, she and Rod were in bed still. It was still very early morning, and between them was their youngest daughter, Annie. And the phone rings, and Rod picks it up and hands it to Patty, and then it's, an FBI agent saying, "We're at your door, let us in, or we're going to break the door down." And she's like, "Oh, come on, this is a joke." Click, hangs up. And then they call back, and then it's clear to both the Blagojeviches that this is not a joke, and it's very real. And, in the span of several minutes there, their world gets turned upside down, where, it concludes with, both girls remaining asleep in their bedrooms and Rod Blagojevich being led out in handcuffs out the back entrance of the, or back exit of the house. And then she's left there with the silence of this house to kind of contemplate what had just happened.
I'm talking with Dave McKinney of member station WBEZ in Chicago. He's host of a new podcast that just kicked off called Public Official A. One episode is already out and more are on the way. We're talking about Rod Blagojevich's fall from grace and his removal from office and also the trial that took place. Dave, you mentioned you talked to a lot of different people, including Patty Blagojevich, and some people are not necessarily fans of the former governor or the Blagojevich family, and others may be. But did you worry at times that you might be giving a platform here for just what they want? Maybe try to grab some empathy from the public for him to get out of prison early?
Well, I mean, you look at what Mrs. Blagojevich in particular has been doing over many, many months. You know, she's been trying to get whatever, you know, to go on whatever platform she can to basically make the case that, her husband was wrongly convicted and then the prison sentence was unjust. And, you know, and I think had we just stuck with an interview of her, you know, that would have been a concern. But this is this podcast and the whole project is much more involved in that, where, you know, we sought out the law enforcement people from, you know, as we mentioned, the FBI, the lead prosecutor in the case, Reed Schar. We sat down and had a lengthy conversation with the former attorney general, Lisa Madigan, who, you know, her office gets involved in the whole Blagojevich saga because of the original accusation that came from Dick Mell, the Mrs. Blagojevich's father, who, you know, back in early 2005, said that board and commission seats were being, you know, basically sold to the highest bidder. And what we heard from Madigan, she just characterized the whole experience being a fellow office holder with Rod Blagojevich as the Blagojevich reign of terror. And she outlined this anecdote to us that, you know, it's really, I mean, that's the beauty of a project like this, where, you know, a lot's been written and said about these people, but hearing them retell this stuff in their own voices is quite something. Like, she talked about how after she began this investigation into the Mell accusation, that not long afterwards, the Blagojevich administration told all of the agency directors and agency lawyers that were under his control to stop communicating with anybody in the AG's office. And why that's significant is that, you know, they have, at any given time, 30,000 cases pending against the state of Illinois. And so there has to be kind of a line of communications open between the administration and the attorney general, which is, you know, representing the administration in court. But probably the biggest and most colorful piece of retribution beyond that occurred as a result of her getting involved in this was that, you know, the bathroom in the Thompson Center for the attorney general's office, the bathrooms were basically allowed to kind of just devolve into, you know, non-working order, where, you know, things would break. There would be leaks. There was no soap in it. And of course, the governor at that point, and still the case today, the governor controls the upkeep and operations of the Thompson Center. And so she looked at that as like, you know, they're messing around with us. They're screwing around and trying to, you know, make life difficult on us by turning our bathrooms into this kind of awful place. So, I mean, hearing anecdotes like that from participants was really a rich thing.
One of the people that you tried to get an interview with and did not, Rod Blagojevich, it seemed as though things were moving along there from what you indicated, that you might have had a shot to talk with him. It seemed like you were going to get that opportunity, and then that opportunity went away.
Yeah, I mean, it appeared after, you know, again, as we mentioned, I mean, 6 hours of time roughly with Mrs. Blagojevich. I mean, I think she grew to get comfortable with both Colin, my producer, and me, and she was all on board with her husband talking to us, and she said she'd talk to him, and it appeared that he was on board with it. And so, you know, it's a bit of a thing to coordinate interviews with people who are sitting in federal prison. You have to get approval of the prison system, and that can take weeks and months, and, you know, phone calls not being returned or emails not being answered. And finally, we get the approval of the prison in Colorado. You know, they say that, you know, we will, you know, let, we'll, you know, allow this to happen if we get, you know, cooperation from Blagojevich himself. And then the next thing we know is Blagojevich wants to talk to his lawyer. And we follow up then with Patty. And, you know, what we then come to learn is that in December, these guys believe that, you know, there is genuine movement at the White House towards some sort of commutation. And, you know, and it appeared with Trump tweeting about one of Patty's appearances on a Fox News program in December that there might be merit to that. But here we are, you know, midway through the month, and there's been silence. So I think that there has to be a level of frustration that, you know, this has not come to fruition yet.
Well, Dave, as I mentioned, you've just launched the first of the podcast episodes. You've got some more to come on this topic. And what else can we expect? Who will we be hearing from? Some of the other stories that will be out there?
You know, what we're trying to do is mix a little bit of detail about, you know, the family dysfunction. You know, that was, as I mentioned, Dick Mell and Rod Blagojevich, the two of them had a very strained relationship, I think, their entire lives. We talk about how Rod and Patty met, talk about Rod's early career and his evolution into becoming governor. We spent a little time talking about kind of the way the two trajectories of both he and Barack Obama intersect, and then, you know, Obama totally, you know, his arc goes straight to the moon, and here Rod is, as he mentions on the tapes, stuck in Springfield. And you know, we go into the arrest. We'll be talking some about the you know, the debate over whether 14 years is too long of a sentence. And you know, Patty Blagojevich, in the case of the convicted Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke, who shot and killed Laquan McDonald, Patty is you know, out tweeting about how unjust it was that her husband has got a 14-year prison term, and Van Dyke winds up getting 81 months. And so you get a flavor of all of that, the full picture. And as I mentioned at the very onset here, what makes this such an interesting, timely thing 10 years later is this question: is Blagojevich, has he been in prison too long, and is Trump going to do something about it? And those really are kind of what make this a current story.
And we'll continue to follow along. And Dave McKinney of member station WBEZ, thanks for being with us today.
Sean, thanks for having me.
The podcast is called Public Official A. We have a link at our website at nprillinois.org.